Welcome to the BBRO May Beatcast. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and Knowledge Exchange Manager for BBRO. Now, last month we reported how great it was that we were getting the crop in the ground and drilling was well underway. And unfortunately, this month we're all looking to the heavens thinking we need some rain. And it's the wider implications of water use that we're going to discuss this month as we meet up with Rob Holland from Anglian Water.
So, it's a funny day today because the news as I was driving to my latest victim for my podcast was talking about water issues and some of the contractual issues that both the water companies and Environment Agency have. And I actually happen to be at Anglian Water today and I'm meeting with Rob Holland, one of the catchment advisors. But we're actually looking at a slightly different issue and a bit more positive because we're looking at farming and water use. And Rob, thank you very much for agreeing to speak to me first.
Pleasure.
Yeah, you are a water catchment advisor. So do you want to just give me a little bit of background about what that actually means?
Yeah, sure. So, so my role is catchment advisor, cover the whole of Norfolk and stretch down into Suffolk. And essentially, I describe my role as talking to land owners, land managers, farmers about their land use and how they're using that land and how we can possibly reduce the pollutants leaving that land and entering the environment, from which obviously we're then abstracting water for drinking water.
Yeah. And you and I go back quite a few years, don't you?
Just a few.
We met in Young Farmers, and at that time you were looking to get into agriculture, weren't you? So I know you've got quite a good background in farming.
Yeah. So I was up at Rhizome and then left there and worked on a couple of big arable farms around the Boston Sleaford area. A range of crops from Brussels sprouts through to sugar beet, potatoes and cereals. And then moved down to Norfolk to milk cows for a friend of ours. Mm-hmm. And it's where I met you at Windham Young Farmers. I did move on to gas pipelines for a while. I was an agricultural liaison officer, so still connected in with farming there. And eventually working for Essex Suffolk Water and now Anglian Water as a catchment advisor.
I'm glad to hear that you had sugar beet in that
rotation
wherever you've been. And I know you've supported some of our BBRO sugar beet events with growers as well. So obviously very dry at the moment. We've had a number of inquiries and people saying, is it worth irrigating at this time of year? And, BBRO, we have done some work on that. Probably not right for sugar beet, but what would be your take?
I think I can understand why people are maybe keen to get some water on their very juvenile crops at the moment, but I think they've got to bear in mind the amount of bare soil that is exposed to any irrigation. It is running the risks of surface runoff, and with it, pesticide losses, and nutrient losses as well as possibly doing quite a lot of damage to the actual soil structure.
Yeah, and obviously with sugar beet, if it's not actually established, chance of washing that away as well. And also with sort of this current climate, we know from our previous research that with sugar beet, obviously the deficit on a really bad year is 25% of yield could be lost, but when it's sporadic, then it's probably a 10% loss on those with a light sandy soil. And obviously the heavy soils will hold the moisture longer.
Yeah, yeah. But
do you notice any difference on farms that are sandy, that need to use more water? How does it affect your water table?
I suppose it's... here at Higham, where we abstract straight out of the River Wensum, it could be changing the river flows, and we will have a limit on when we can actually abstract. There's a lower limit on the flow stipulated by the EA, such as there is with any irrigation, direct irrigation license from a river. So I suppose it is posing that risk of, low flows in the river being increased by irrigation. And with the forecast, with very little rain in the forecast for the next couple of weeks, that could start affecting the river flow. And we will hold on to our licence a bit longer than irrigators would, because they would be the ones notified by the EA to stop irrigation or abstraction earlier than we will.
We assume climate change, that we're going to have more droughts, that it's going to be a bigger issue. Is the solution just going to be more reservoirs on farm?
I think that's got to be one of the biggest solutions out there, yeah. And if you are an irrigator and you want to secure that water supply, then I think that is the biggest answer to it. Yeah, we work with a number of organisations such as Water Resources East, and yeah, they are looking at projects for groundwater recharge, which in this part of the world, you know, will hopefully keep those river flows a bit higher than, you know, during those drought periods.
As your role, do you go out and support farmers to come together and create reservoirs or put together packages?
I wouldn't say that we get heavily involved with that. We probably rely on the EA to look at those abstraction licences. They are the people who are regulating and river flows, but we'll be looking at river flows and how abstractions will be affecting those river flows. We have, through other groups such as Water Resources East and other organisations where they come to bring these people together, that those conversations are had. Yeah, we're always looking 20, 30, 40 years ahead from our water resources perspective, and we know that there's going to be challenges with climate change, sporadic weather that we get now. So we're always looking at those challenges, and farmers need to be looking at that water security challenges as well.
So if you're already looking at that, what are you able to say with any of the plans that you've got in place or what you're hoping to do?
Yeah, we publish a water resources management plan, and that looks at forecasting what water will be required by our customers for drinking water side of things anyway. And for the first time I've seen in the nearly 20 years that I've been in the water industry, desalination plants is one of those solutions that is now seriously being looked at.
So obviously water quality is important to all of us, and I take it you've got an on-site lab here. Do they process the water that comes out? Or are they processing it? I'm assuming lots of steps?
Obviously, our drinking water is sampled at multiple places during the process itself, but also at customers' taps as well. And the main labs are actually over at Huntingdon. So a lot of samples are going through Huntingdon every day, wastewater and drinking water samples.
And that's you're shipping samples from here to Huntingdon?
Yes, okay. Exactly. So and from all of our drinking water sources, raw water and final water. I say we actually even test out customers' taps as well to make sure that through the pipelines, water towers, etc., that water is still at that quality that it should be. And we even have people in the labs who will have keen senses of smell and taste, and they will actually do smell and taste testing on that water as well.
Now I can see the draw of doing wine taster or chocolate or something on that line, but tasting the difference in water, that's got to be a hard one to do.
Yeah, no, I've never been invited to do it, so I've obviously not got the sense of smell required.
Yeah, no, I there's only so much water you can drink.
Yes.
They must be very healthy. Yeah. obviously there's an awful lot of work goes on here in getting that water quality right, not getting it out to all of the households and back to farms and the rest of it. But you actually want to really support agriculture, and I understand there's a new grants programme that's about to be launched.
Yeah, so Water Company's working 5-year financial periods or management periods. So we're just coming out of what was Asset Management Plan 7 and moving into Asset Management Plan 8 or AMP 8. So we're now reflecting on what we offered farmers through grants in AMP 7, looking to what we can do or carry on doing in AMP 8. So very shortly, hopefully, we'll be opening up our training grant, which is hopefully boosting on-farm education, understanding of what land managers are doing. And that's open not just to land managers, it's sprayer operators, those people guys and girls on the ground. We'll hopefully do our farm innovation grant, which is a larger amount of money, and that's bringing change onto your farm, really. So it may be moving towards reduced tillage or all sorts of different things, and sugar beet has featured in that as well. And soil management, really, whether it be detailed soil mapping and changes to variable rate spreaders or whatever else. So they're things that we're looking at the moment. Hopefully we will have that pinned down in a month's time, 2 months' time, something like that. And, please keep an eye on our website, catchment pages, for those grants coming out, those start dates.
Yeah, and I know BBRO have got a number of links in with Angle Waters and projects that we're mm-hmm. looking at, because for us, soil management obviously is a huge one. We're actually also looking at drought-tolerant varieties at the moment, so mm-hmm. that's another project to just try and ensure that we've got the resilience in there for the crop in future. And I think working with you, with the wider Angle Water team, has been great for us to see some of the impacts that is happening on farm and what it means to you. And I know we've talked before about how you identify chemicals in the water mm-hmm. and what you then have to do about it. We've talked about metaldehyde. No longer available, but that was one of the major issues for you in the past, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And that's really where the catchment team came together within Angle Water. Because metaldehyde wasn't a chemical that we could remove through our conventional treatment processes. So the only way that we could address the problem, the issue, was by talking to farmers and encouraging them to better their slug management processes or strategy, sorry, I should say. And that may have involved ferric phosphate pellets or crop changes, cultivation changes to try to address those slug issues without using metaldehyde. But with metaldehyde now gone, our sort of focus is on total pesticides. So we're not only looking, or we don't only have a regulatory level of 0.1 micrograms per litre for a single pesticide, we also have a level of 0.5 micrograms per litre for total pesticides. So anything else that's coming in is all added up, and it's got to be below that 0.5. So we haven't forgotten about pesticides at all. They can be an issue, and certain ones, Quimerac, Clopyrrolid, Metamitron and Lenacil, connected with beet growing, can sometimes cause a spike in the pesticide levels in the water that we abstract.
And I know you try to sort of engineer solutions with that, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. through purifiers and things. Yep. So what happens when you can't engineer a solution?
So you're right. The process that we go through, there's ozone that goes through the water and carbon filtering, which I'm sure most people would be familiar with carbon. But we will have to blend water from cleaner sources, for want of a better word. So groundwater sources generally have less pesticides in. But then we have a nitrate issue sometimes with groundwaters. But blending those waters together, along with the treatment processes, we can bring that water in line with EU regulatory levels for drinking water.
And a lot of people think the feedback is, it's all farming. But it's not just from farming that you have the issues. It's from your own sewage plants. It's from factories, all sorts. So it's quite a balancing act for you, isn't it?
It is, and a lot of the time it is down to what flow we're seeing in the rivers, what is coming off roads in directly into our sources, whether that be groundwater or surface water. We are constantly monitoring that raw water, as it's known within the industry, for its level of pollutants, and we may have to reduce abstraction from a river and increase the groundwater abstraction to carry on supplying that water through the system.
And when we've got periods of drought, obviously if your water level's going down, is it the percentage higher level?
I suppose from a herbicide pesticide side of things, it tends to be those autumn herbicides, just because of the time of application, soil moisture levels are high, and the potential drainage from land, roads, etc., will also be, will be high, that potential flow. But then you're also getting a dilution in the higher amount of water in, the higher volume of water in the rivers. But it is always that autumn herbicide, which is our risk period, if you like. Beyond that, you get into spring and sugar beet drilling. Sometimes we get the odd spike if we do get some heavy rain, especially at this time of year when the crop is small, and there isn't that uptake really. And then we move into summer, and we don't tend to see very much then. Basically, the herbicide applications are going down, it moves into insecticides and fungicides, and because of the target that they are hitting on the plant rather than on the ground, we don't tend to see very much of those coming through.
Yeah, and we always say, especially even now with the aphicide use, the more leaf cover, the better. It's a waste of product to go on the soil.
Absolutely, so you want to be hitting your target, don't you? Yes,
and for us, the sugar beet, if, say, there was some queries about irrigating now, people irrigate now, they've got to continue to irrigate because the taproot's not deep enough.
Yeah.
And so we would be saying probably best not to. And from what you've said here, the best time to be irrigating for us, for sugar beet, would be in June and July when the canopy's full.
Yeah.
And certainly from our previous research work on irrigation, that's when the crop can really take advantage of any extra moisture, we would be supporting that if it stacks up. Not always cost effective for farmers. If you've got spare water, then June, July might be the time to be using it, but I would say for anyone, check your figures before you do it.
I was going to say, you've got to think long and hard about it, haven't you, because you obviously need that water later on.
But it must be hard for you, understanding agriculture, understanding the issues for the farmer, and then dealing this side of the day job as to what's required by the business.
Yeah, well, I think that's our team has all got agricultural background somewhere along the line. With one guy's an ex-farm manager. I've always been in farming somewhere along the line, and the rest of our team have as well. And we like to think that we're also teaching those within Anglian Water about farming and the expectations of what we can and can't ask farmers to be doing, and that's where the beauty of connecting with yourselves, BBRO, and other organisations within agricultural industries, really good and fundamental contacts.
Yeah, and I know you've got a wealth of information on the website.
Absolutely, and there'll be links in there to other organisations such as the VI for pesticide guidance and stuff like that. So absolutely. Yeah, please get in contact.
Now, we're sitting in the old pump house, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a glorious building, it's beautiful. But it does remind me, actually, you've got a little bit of an engineering bent as well, haven't you? I remember, that's a few years back, you were creating new machinery.
Yes, I'm a piece of kit to try to reduce the amount of runoff and erosion off tram line. Broads Authority bought one, the only one to be bought. So the Broads Authority do have my piece of kit and a couple of other pieces of kit that do address tram line erosion, which I believe that is still free for farmers to trial if they would like to give it a go. Now, it's out there, and there seemed to be a lot of interest, but unfortunately it just didn't seem to tie in with the farming calendar. It was another operation.
Farmers have got more than enough on their plate as it is at the moment, so
But I think that is a key thing. We need to be talking to farmers within the growing calendar and understanding that calendar, but also feeding that back into our scientists within Anglian Water and the general management of Anglian Water and what they can and can't expect.
Thank you as much for your time, Rob. It's been great
pleasure
to see you. Lovely to see this building as well. And all the best for your job, and hopefully we'll be working together a bit closer over the summer as well.
I'm sure we will be. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Further information on irrigation in sugar beet can be found in the BBRO reference book, an updated edition of which has just been released on our website. It can be found under publications. And of course, you can ask us more questions when you join us for the demo farms. On the 14th of May, we are at Morley in Norfolk in the morning, Linton in Cambridgeshire in the afternoon, and we'll be setting up in Navenby in Lincolnshire on the morning of the 15th of May. Please do book a place via the BBRO website under events, and we very much look forward to seeing you and hope that we do indeed see a bit of rain. Thank you very much for listening.